Lauren.
Mike.
Lauren, which do you prefer? A laptop with a detachable screen or a tablet with a detachable keyboard?
So many choices this early in the morning. I have to say that I probably go first and foremost with a clamshell. Call me traditional. Call me old-fashioned. Followed by a tablet with a detachable keyboard. How about you?
I want a clamshell where the screen also detaches and swivels over the keyboard so I can't type.
Oh, okay. Well, do we have something for you?
We're going to talk about all those options on today's show.
All right.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Gadget Lab. I'm Michael Calori, a senior editor at Wired.
And I'm Lauren Good, a senior writer at Wired, and this week I'm podcasting from Casey Newton's closet.
Hello, Casey.
It's not actually his closet. It's just his apartment. Thank you, Casey.
We're also joined remotely by Wired's newest products and reviews writer, Brenda Stoliar. Welcome, Brenda.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Your inaugural Gadget Lab. It's so exciting to have you on.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm very excited to do this.
We are deep into what we call here at Wired hardware silly season. Last week, Apple announced a bunch of new stuff, and this week, Microsoft took its turn. In a splashy live stream on Wednesday, the company detailed some of its upcoming hardware drops. We saw new Surface computers, a weird laptop with a flippy screen, an update to the Surface Duo, the dual-screened phone foldable mobile thing. Okay, well, it's definitely a phone, but we'll get into the Duo later on in the show. First, we want to talk about all the new Surface hardware. Now, Brenda and Lauren, you both got a chance to report on the new Microsoft stuff this week. So let's start with you, Brenda. Of the many Surfaces you saw, which Surface was the most surprising?
Okay, so I thought about this question for a while. Well, 24 hours, I guess, at this point. But I know we're going to be talking about the Surface Duo 2 later, but I just have to say, like, that's the one thing that came to mind. I don't know if I was in denial over it because of how it went last time around. I know that there were rumors. I know that we saw it coming. But I remember when I walked into the demo area, that was the first thing I saw. And I was just like, okay, like, we're doing this. Like, it's here. And we're all going to act like the first one didn't happen. We're just going to move forward. And so, yeah, I think just seeing it in person after, in my brain, I kind of just like, I was like, they tried. Microsoft tried. But then the other thing I'm going to say is the Surface Laptop Studio, which I know, Lauren, you're also going to talk about. But I think it was just nice to see something completely different, like a whole new category, so to speak, I guess, in their lineup, because everything else, we all knew that there was going to be some upgrades to existing models. So it was refreshing to just see something new from the kind of yearly changes.
What exactly is new about the Surface Laptop Studio? Try to explain it to us. And I love this, by the way, because Brenda, you saw this a few hours before I did on East Coast time. And then I saw it, you know, later in the day on Pacific time. And you came back to the newsroom, the virtual newsroom, and you were trying to explain it via Slack, and we were all like, what does this thing do? And
you wait, like, so it has a, what, it's, where's the...
Where does the screen go? Yeah, so tell us about this.
And I didn't realize it was so difficult to explain until I had to explain it, and I felt like I might as well have been speaking another language, because I was like, I see it in my brain, but I don't know if that, the verbal explanation worked. Okay, so at first glance, it looks just like a regular laptop. You have your screen, you have your keys, your keyboard and your touchpad. And then behind the display are two hinges. And what you do is you can move the display towards you. So essentially the hinge almost like splits the display and it lets you move it towards you. So you can place it in three different modes. So you have laptop mode, touchpad, keyboard. You have stage mode, which lets you place the display, like move it forward towards you so you can watch movies, makes it more comfortable. It's like at a slant. And then there is studio mode, which lets you place it flat like a tablet, and you can use, it's compatible with the Slim Pen too, so you can comfortably draw on it. So it's built on the Surface Book 3, which I thought it was at first, and then I wasn't sure if it was built on the Surface Laptop design. But yeah, Surface Book 3, and then Surface Studio. So they basically just combined it to create one. It's also, I will say, I really like that the internals are all on the bottom, because with the Surface Book 3, it's very top heavy. This one was pretty lightweight for such a intense contraption.
And you can also get it with a NVIDIA graphics card too, right? So, I mean, provided that there aren't supply chain issues for that. And so this is really aimed at people, and it's expensive. So it's aimed at people who want to do quote unquote pro grade work.
Yeah, it starts at $1,600, which is an investment. But you are getting a lot in one. So for people that have like a day-to-day workflow that works with that, I think it might be worth it. I don't know. We'll see how it works in the wild. But it was cool. Cool concept.
What about you, Lauren? What was surprising to you when you saw this stuff?
I agree with Brenda that I think the Surface Studio Book Laptop Surface and Surface Book had a baby thing was probably the most interesting. Ever since Microsoft started making its own PCs, dating way back to the giant Surface tabletop computer. I don't know if you guys remember that.
I do, yeah.
But then even more recently, the hybrids that it started rolling out in 2012, the company's just been experimenting, right? And a lot of these have been whiffs, either because the hardware was too early. I'm sure a lot of you remember the ARM processors on the Surface RT, which didn't, it was a flop, and now we see more and more of a move towards ARM-based processors and PCs. So in that case, they were too early, or because the software was just a flop too, like Windows 8, right? So that's a bit of a chicken and an egg problem. And also Microsoft, like a lot of other PC makers, are still relying on Intel for their chips, and Intel has flagged an innovation in recent years, right? Because our mobile phones, in many cases, are our computers now, and mobile processors can do amazing things. That said, you know, Microsoft has the money to experiment. They keep pushing forward with Surface. There have been times in recent years when it has even eked into the top five of PC makers globally, which is pretty impressive. It's now a $1 billion business for Microsoft, the whole Surface business. And they're willing to experiment. So I think if anything stood out to me, once again, it was the Surface, what is it called? The Surface Book? The Surface Laptop Studio. Is that correct?
Yes, Surface Laptop okay. Studio. Although it should have been the Surface Book Studio. Literally.
Yes, that's so true. Because it's based on the book. It's not based on the laptop.
Yeah, which is why I thought it was the laptop, Surface Laptop and the studio mixed together. And then they were like, we built it on the heritage of the Surface Book,
the book.
And the Surface Studio. And I was like, that's right. A Surface Book Studio. That's not right. A Surface Laptop Studio. I guess they just like want to make it known that it's a laptop, and they don't want to confuse people who maybe aren't familiar with the Surface Book line. Like, they don't, I don't know. They just want people to know it's a laptop, clearly.
Yeah, they want people to know it's a laptop. It's not a detachable. But I guess it doesn't have the Alcantara fabric. It's not super slim and light the way that they're sort of striving for with the Surface Laptop. It really is more the heritage of the book. Yeah, just the design was nifty. I also thought the pen was pretty cool, the redesigned pen. It's got like a little bit of a drag to it now in a good way. Not latency, not like when you connect it with the screen, it's slow to write. It's just, they've created this kind of feedback where it feels like you're actually dragging a pencil across a piece of paper, which I thought was pretty cool for a stylus. And then I guess if I had to throw in like an accessory that I thought was really interesting, Microsoft also showed off a couple of interesting accessories. One is an accessibility pack for surfaces in particular. So this is for people with low vision or limited motor skills. It's basically just a pack of stickers. These are tactile adhesive buttons that you can put on certain keycaps. You can put on a cable and then put a corresponding sticker on the corresponding port on the laptop. You can attach a lanyard to the front of your keyboard. It has a loop at the end of it, and then you can just sort of get your finger in there and open your laptop a lot more easily. Sometimes laptops can be surprisingly challenging to open. And so that was pretty interesting. And then the second small thing was, I think we all kind of loved this. It's a mouse made of 20% recycled ocean plastic, little bit of a gimmick in terms of, you know, in sustainability and whatnot, but it just, it looked cool. It was really lightweight and it looked like a bar of soap. And I was saying yesterday that it's, I think it's the first computer mouse I've wanted to like wash my face with. It just looked cool. I know, just like roll it over there. I mean, who needs a jade roller? You just take the mouse and you just kind of, anyway, sorry. Okay. Mike, what surprised you about Microsoft's announcements yesterday?
I was surprised to see the X, the Surface X, just because it has traditionally not been the best computer. It's cheaper, right? It's like the low-budget Surface. It runs an ARM processor, and as we know, there have been some issues with app support for ARM processors, and they got that mostly ironed out last year, but I think now you still need to have apps that are optimized to run on ARM in order for them to feel like they're regular Windows apps. Also, the price dropped on it. It's now $899. Which makes it $200 cheaper than the actual Surface Pro 8 starting price. So maybe more people will be attracted to it at that price, but still it's like, if you have the ARM version or the full Intel version and you have to make a choice, like why would you choose the ARM one? It just seems so underpowered. At least that's what our testing has proven, and all the reviews that I've read have said the same thing about it. So feels like something that should just go away, but it didn't. And honestly, you know, we've all been praising Microsoft's experimentation and their willingness to experiment. And while I do appreciate that, my favorite Surface is the Surface laptop.
That Alcantara.
Yeah. Well, it's not just the yes. Alcantara fabric coating. It's the fact that it's inexpensive and it's a laptop. It is the best machine for most people, right? You know, and like when you have these tablets that have the detachable keyboards and they have these kickstands, you can't really use that on your lap. You need a table. And just think about how you use your laptop around your house. Like right now, I'm standing in my closet and I have my laptop on a little shelf. If I had a Surface, it wouldn't work. It just would not work at all. Of course, I could probably take the keyboard off and put it on a stand because it's a tablet. So it's a little bit more, versatile in that regard. But for the most part, if you're buying something to do like laptop-y stuff, you should just get a laptop. So my favorite is the Surface Laptop. Now, the Surface Laptop 4 came out at the beginning of this year, or at least that's when all the reviews dropped, at the beginning of this year. And It's everybody's saying, like, if you're just getting a Microsoft laptop, just get this one. So I agree with that. And to me, it was surprising that when we go into an event like this, there's all this flashy new stuff and nobody talks about like the Jetta of the lineup, you know, the Accord of the lineup, the thing that is like the thing that is that most people are going to buy, that everybody loves, that works for everyone. So much love for the SL4. We missed you this week.
I have a Surface Laptop 4 at home here, Mike, on loan from Microsoft. I asked to borrow one so that I could start running beta versions of Windows 11. And you're welcome to borrow it if you'd like. Just wanted to say that.
No thanks. I'm an Apple boy. All right. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about that Duo 2. Welcome back. Last year, Microsoft jumped aboard the foldables trend and released the Surface Duo. Longtime listeners to the show have heard us talk about this thing before. You've probably heard Lauren talk about how much she loves it. It's a pocket-sized device that flips open and close like a book. And unlike other foldables we've seen, where you get one big screen on the inside with a barely there crease running down the center, the Duo actually has two screens that are separated by a big old hinge. Now, back when it first launched, Microsoft pitched the device as a multitasking mini computer made for work, which is so very Microsoft. The company also absolutely insisted that it was not a phone. Now it ran Android and it could make phone calls, but they refused to call it a phone. Well, almost nobody bought a Duo, and now Microsoft has revamped the design. Lauren, you got a chance to look at the Surface Duo 2 this week. So please tell us, can we start calling it a phone now?
Yes, we can call it a phone now. Panos Panay was very insistent during that briefing in the fall of 2019, back in person in the before times, that it was not a phone, as you mentioned. It was more like, you know, it's a new category of device, right? Is how it was presented, and I said, like, well, it makes phone calls. Like I remember one of the intro screens for the marketing video for it was like a woman accepting a phone call. And I'm like, that's a phone. And they're like, no, it's not a phone. But, you know, there were a couple things about it that maybe indicated, okay, it is kind of a weird hybrid device. Like, it didn't have rear-facing cameras. It had a front-facing camera. And if you wanted to, you could flip the flap back and then take a photo that way. But I don't know if anyone who bought the thing ever used it that way. So there were no rear cameras. And the emphasis really was on productivity. Like, here's how you'd use Microsoft Outlook across two panes of screen.
Outlook. The most exciting phone demo ever.
Yeah.
Outlook.
So now it's a phone. And now it's like, you know, there's a three camera module on the back of it. So there's a wide angle, an ultra wide angle, and a telephoto lens.
Like a
phone. It's a 12 megapixel camera system. The module is ugly, but it's there. And the way that Microsoft was demonstrating it was really more about like having fun with it. Like here's how you play casual games using these two different screens. And I even got a demo of TikTok where like one page you're looking at the video that you're currently on and the other page is basically like your For You page that shows like rows and rows of upcoming videos, which was like a cool way to experience TikTok. Just snapping photos with it. Like you can use one side of the Duo 2 as your viewfinder and then the other, and then immediately the photo you've just snapped appears briefly on the other, you know, the other display. And so you can look at it and see if you need to continue taking more photos to get the shot. And then you can go into edit mode and then you end up having this, you know, palette essentially for editing your photos across two different displays. So, you know, it's kind of been an interesting strategy for them because on the one hand, that split down the middle means that apps have to be optimized to work around that. But on the other hand, maybe it's not quite as vulnerable to durability issues as something like the Samsung Galaxy Fold, or the Z Flip, which are creating one unified flexible polymer display across two different, you know, sort of sections of a phone, which we know they're less durable, right? So maybe the Duo is actually the way to go. It kind of reminds me of like if you just like took an iPad mini and like cut it in half and then said, it's a book now. Yeah, I don't know. I'm excited to play with this thing. It's also $1,500. So,
yikes.
Yeah. Brenda, what did you think of it when you saw it?
So when I first picked it up, my first thought was like, oh, okay, this feels a lot nicer than the last one. I don't know why. When I first picked up the last one, it still just like felt very prototype-y to me. Like, it just didn't feel nice. But this one felt a lot more sleek, definitely a lot more high-end almost. But for me, like, I know that we have foldables and then you have your dual screen phones. Like, people like to keep those separate. And I guess after seeing literally like the Fold 3 and the Flip 3 and just seeing glass fold, like, to me, that's like, compared to the Duo, it feels like that should have happened so much longer ago. It's like you look at these two dual screen phones and you're like, okay, what, like a feat of engineering compared to like a folding glass display. Yeah, it just doesn't feel as exciting for me anymore. I think if the Duo had come out like, yeah, you know, long before the Fold or the Flip, even the Razer, I'll throw that one in there, even though it definitely sucked. They still managed to make that one fold. It just feels dated to me at this point, and I still feel like it's a little bit confusing for the common person to grasp the concept of. When you have these dual screens, I don't think it's as easy as just picking it up and learning how to use it. I think that it very much reminds me of one of those, do you remember the password journals when we were kids? Does anybody remember those plastic password journals? That's what it looks like to me. It was like this like square device and you had to type. No, remember that. Okay, never mind.
Brenda, I'm old enough that my diaries were dead tree.
Yeah, Brenda, I am flattered. I am flattered right now.
I was using like composition notebooks.
Because there's no display on the front. Okay, that's what really reminds me. Like not having this anything on the front, it just looks dated.
Yeah.
Just a long-winded way of me saying it looks dated. I think also just the $1,500 price tag is that's asking for a lot. But I'm glad that they did make improvements that they should have applied to the first round. That's all to say that it just feels like they're really behind on this one. And it shouldn't have been so difficult for a dual screen phone. I think with Samsung, it was easier to like almost forgive because foldables are still very much in their infancy, I feel like, for the mainstream. So yeah, like seeing the iterations, like I was less harsh. But with this, it's like, it's just two screens. I don't know. Am I like being dramatic? No. It's two screens. Like, why is it so hard?
You're not wrong at all. I'm going to agree with you because, like, especially for $1,500, right? For $1,500, you get a phone that has two screens on it, where for the same money, you could get an actual phone with one screen that has one of the best mobile cameras that has ever been created, has a superior display, and you can actually use it to like shoot a feature film if you want to. You can't necessarily do that on the Duo. You can also actually watch a feature film on it, which if you do on the Duo, you're only using half the screen. So, you know, I think if you're talking about spending that kind of money, you should just get like a real phone that can do real phone things that's just super badass. Mm-hmm. Instead of this one, which kind of feels limited for phone things because of the dual screen arrangement. And I understand like for productivity and for the cool thing, like it is really cool that you can have the photo on one side and then have the sort of controls to adjust the photo on the other side. But have any of us like ever really had that much of a problem doing the same thing inside of a photo editing app on a phone with just like a regular screen? I would say like, no. You know, probably 95 out of 100 people would say no, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We're so used to task switching and app switching at this point. On our current, you know, somewhat limited mobile devices, like limited in terms of real estate, that it's not that hard to do.
So I would argue that the problem that Microsoft is looking to solve is something that our brains have already solved for us.
That's interesting.
And we shouldn't have to pay $1,500 for it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm definitely intrigued by the Duo 2, and I hope that I get a loaner unit to review. Julian reviewed the last one for us, and I think he gave it a 4 out of 10. So we'll see. We'll see what we think of this one. But just to pile on here, when I look at something like the Samsung Galaxy, so the Z Flip 3 Fold, blah, blah, the one that folds, you know, closed like an old fashioned little flip phone, and I think about outdoor activities, going for a jog, going for a hike. Anything that involves the phone actually being on your person and you're not just holding in your hands doing work, something like the Duo 2 is still really not appealing. Something like the Z Flip Fold, I think, is the way to go. And so, yeah, we're seeing like innovation happen in these like weird areas coming from different directions. I still believe in some ways foldables might end up being the 3D TV of this decade. We'll see if that turns out to be true. If I'm wrong, I will admit that I'm wrong. But you got to appreciate the experimentation, I think, too.
Lauren, I look forward to reading your piece about how foldables are the new 3D TVs.
You can go to wired.com and enjoy that right now.
Oh, right. You already wrote it.
Yes.
Nice.
And if I don't respond to your Slacks while I'm writing about the Duo 2, it's because I literally can't find the Slack app on the screens.
Let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll do our recommendations. Brenda, you are our guest. You get to go first. What's your recommendation?
Okay, so it is a show. It's a Peacock original, so you'll have to have Peacock. Subscribe to that. And
are you giving out your username and password on this program?
Honestly, sure, if anybody wants it. I don't really use it that often. Like, this is literally a once-in-a-lifetime type thing. No offense to Peacock, but I don't know. This was a recommendation from a friend, so it's a recommendation in a recommendation. So it's called Dr. Death, and it is based on a true story, and there's also a documentary, but this show is a little, I guess, they emphasize and fictionalize a lot. But it is about a doctor who botches a lot of spinal tap surgeries, and basically people end up paralyzed, people end up dying, but he just keeps jumping around from hospital to hospital, so it's essentially like the journey of getting him to stop and to lose his license and to put him in prison. I mean, all this is already known because there's a documentary, but very intense, a little bloody. So if you guys don't like watching surgeries and stuff, which I don't, but I am making an exception, it can get a little intense. But very good. I'm not done yet. I'm almost there. But yeah, highly recommend. It's a very thrilling show.
Dr. Death.
Dr. Death.
Solid first recommendation for the show, by the way.
I know. I'm going very morbid.
Lauren, what's your recommendation?
Hopefully that's not a metaphor for the Surface Duo.
Oh.
Staying on theme.
Have I already recommended Athletic Brewing non-alcoholic beers? I may have on an earlier show, maybe around Dry January. I know that our executive editor of news, Brian Barrett, is also a fan of this brand. But you know what? I'm light on recommendations this week, so I'm going to go for it again.
Nice.
I recommend checking out Athletic Brewing non-alcoholic beers. My favorite is called, I think it's called Upside Dawn, which is a golden ale, but there's also a stout, an IPA, and other types of beer as well. I'm recommending this because it is hardware silly season, and you know, occasionally you want to kick back and have a beer, have a drink, but I'm just working on it feels like all the time right now, maybe with the exception of last Friday night. And so like, I'm drinking non-alcoholic beer at the moment, like, which is great. They're delightful. You wake up feeling fresh the next day when you have to tape early morning podcasts or like, you know, microblog some weird Microsoft device. And I recommend that if you're either not drinking alcohol at all or taking a break from alcohol and looking to detox and you're looking for a tasty beer, check out Athletic Brewing Beers.
Nice.
Mike, what's your recommendation?
So I'm going to recommend something that is probably not as healthy as non-alcoholic beer, but it is Indian pizza. So
it sounds way more delicious than non-alcoholic beer.
If you can imagine a pizza, I'm sure you can all imagine a pizza. But instead of, you know, the toppings that you would expect to find on pizza, things like pizza sauce and pepperoni and mushrooms and cheese and spinach and olives and green peppers and all the things that you put on pizza, it is Indian sauces and Indian delicacies that go on it. So things like spiced lentils, spiced spinach, chicken tikka masala, sauces, covering the pizza, and then often also covered with cheese, either like paneer, the Indian cheese, or just regular old shredded mozzarella cheese like you'd find on a normal pizza. This is something that's a sort of a cross-cultural hybrid that was, according to lore, according to popularly accepted lore, was born in San Francisco in the mid-80s. There was a guy named Dalvinder Multani who bought a restaurant that had a pizza oven, and he wanted to serve Indian food, but he decided that he would get started just by making pizza, and then he started making Indian pizza, and that place was called Zante's. I used to live within walking distance of Zante's, and I kind of got hooked on Indian pizza, but now I live pretty far away, and they're like a little bit of shade here. Their delivery is really terrible. Sometimes you wait like 3 hours for your delivery to show up and it's cold and you got to put it in the oven. So I stopped eating it. And then a couple of months ago, a place opened up here next to my house that makes Indian pizza. And now I'm back on the train. Since then, it has exploded in popularity, and you can find Indian pizza restaurants in places like New York, Chicago, different parts of the Midwest. You can find it in any good food city. So my recommendation is check your local listings, find an Indian pizza place near you and try it. And if it's not great, try a different restaurant and see if you like that one better, because I'm telling you, it's amazing.
That sounds delicious.
That really does. And I'm probably going to look for that this weekend, I think, especially in New York.
It's pretty dope. And it's really like, it's versatile, right? So whether you're a vegetarian or vegan, or you have, you know, if you like chicken, you can always get sort of something fun on it that's good for you, that speaks to your palate. So yeah, that's my rec. All right. Well, that's our show. Brenda, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's been delightful. We look forward to having you back on the show many, many more times.
I would love that.
And thank you all for listening. If you have feedback, you can find all of us on Twitter. Just check the show notes. This show is produced by Boone Ashworth. Goodbye. We will be back next week. Hi, everyone. Michael from Gadget Lab here. I want to tell you about our friends over at the Big Take podcast from Bloomberg News. Each weekday, they bring you one important story from their global newsroom, like how AI will upend your life, or why China's targeting the US dollar, and maybe how Joe Biden plans to take on Donald Trump. Oh boy. Check out The Big Take, a daily podcast from Bloomberg, wherever you listen.